From the land-grant university in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 9th day of July, 2026. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets and preview tomorrow's USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. Mike Tenor will help us close out our time together. He'll take a look at a very, very tricky weather forecast. Going forward, the last couple of weeks of July could be hot and dry or cool. We'll have that discussion with Mike, and along the way, you'll hear about what I was up to yesterday and why I was out of the office short notice. It had to do with a Cooper's Hawk. So stay with us for this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day settled down 3.5 cents at 431.5. December 452, down 4.25. And March corn at 467.25, 4.25 cents lower. August beans 15.5 lower, $11.77.75. September at 11.70, 13.5 lower. And November at 1181.5, down 10.75. Soft red winter wheat up 10.75 for the December at 634. The hard red December at 668.25, 8.5 cents higher. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us again on a Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Tomorrow, the United States Department of Agriculture updates the WASDE, or World Ag Supply and Demand Estimates, for the month of July. These will incorporate, or should, the acreage and grain stocks figures from the end of the month of June. What are your expectations?
You know, conventional wisdom would tell you they're going to have to pare back on stocks a little bit on corn for both old crop and new crop. If you look at the NAS numbers, you know, the trade essentially felt like we'd have more than 100 million bushels, more than what the U.S. or what NAS came up with. So you've got to assume that some of that will translate over to the balance sheet. I mean, whenever you look at some of the demand figures, it doesn't always make sense. Yes, they're probably too low on exports, but they're probably too high on ethanol. And everyone's felt like they've been too high on feed and residual all along. But feed and residual, a lot of times, is where they kind of use their fudge factor, if you will. So it looks to me like they maybe missed that 25 crop a little bit, overestimated it slightly. And if that's the case, I think they'll just have to have some creative math to get their carryouts to where they want them. But I do think old crop stock should decline by around 100. And I don't know that they'll translate that over to new crop. I think they may just mess with demand a little bit. But I would expect that old crop stocks will also be down, maybe in that 1.9 range, somewhere in there.
Is it unusual for a market the day before a USDA report to act as it did today, and why?
You know, it's a complicated week, Todd. I mean, obviously, we had really strong opening there Monday, and then Tuesday, of course, we extended the gains a little bit. I do feel like there's some profit taking. July report's not typically viewed as one that is super volatile, if you will, but there was probably some people that made money on the long side of this thing, pulling positions off. From a weather standpoint, you've got to assume the corn strength would be more attributable to weather, you know, than soybeans. I mean, beans are an August crop. Obviously, most of the talk is China was in buying soybeans. But I think that you're taking the shine off that story just a little bit here today. Again, profit taking is probably mostly to blame. But I wouldn't say it's totally abnormal to see a day like today ahead of a report, especially whenever we've had a strong move in one direction. A lot of times you take some of that move and mitigate it somewhat just simply due to people having to take some profits.
Has the introduction of more war premium been put into place at all?
Well, the thing is that crude's actually benefited from that somewhat. It was interesting early in the week in that crude was actually down to a little bit higher through the move on Monday and Tuesday, whereas on a day like today, you know, energies were strong, and you look over at the grains and they're not. So no doubt in my, or at least corn, soybeans, and no doubt in my mind, we've kind of distanced ourselves from those being so strongly correlated. But bottom line is any war premium is not going into the grains. It's maybe a little bit of it's going into wheat, of course, because wheat had a little better day, but certainly, I mean, it is not going into corn or soybeans.
What are you going to be watching most closely for tomorrow or fundamentally in the marketplace from other places?
Yeah, I mean, for tomorrow, I just want to see how much of the NAS numbers translate over to USDA. I mean, are they going to go ahead and drop carry out as you would assume they should? As far as beans go, we don't really expect a whole lot in the way of surprises. There wasn't a whole lot out of the NAS report that you should be worried about, you know, affecting this USDA report. But I guess from my account, I'm going to be watching corn very closely. And then the main thing, of course, from here on out, at least for the next 3, 4, 5 weeks, depending on where we're talking corn or beans, you know, we're going to be watching the weather very closely, see if that heat's going to be as strong, especially in the west, is what some people are suggesting.
On that note, what are crop conditions like for you and the folks that you've been talking with?
Yeah, I mean, our crop conditions, I would say, are good. On the tiled stuff, it looks phenomenal. If it's pattern tiled, the excessive rainfall in June didn't hurt us quite as much. Of course, there's a lot of ponds around, but we've had some years where we've had several ponds and then ended up with an incredible crop because the rest of the corn or soybeans, you know, kind of makes up for it because of the excessive rainfall. I think whenever you move around the country, you've got everything from best ever type yields to people that are really frustrated with not only their ponds, but the thought that they're going to see denitrification. So, you know, anytime you have major water issues, too much water, the market typically does not respond. And then you find that out later in the growing season. And I think in some of these areas that have been excessively wet, that'll be the case again this year. So I don't expect the market to do much in the bullish way, just simply due to the fact that that's not typically what we see from a historical standpoint.
What are producers most often asking you?
Well, they're asking, hey, should we go ahead and be rewarding this rally this week? I mean, I've been asked that 100 times. You know, and I think the best thing to say there is that, hey, if your operation, if you know you can make money here and you're behind on sales, by all means, incrementally reward the market. But at the same time, you might want to keep some flex if you're not real sure about production, because there's no doubt that this thing could turn on a dime, you know, if one or two things happen. And those would most notably be the weather, first of all. And second of all, if China not only decides to buy beans, but buy some corn as well, it would definitely turn this corn market on a little bit different tune.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net. Yesterday, if you were listening, you know that I was away short notice for an undisclosed reason. That reason started Monday evening in my neighborhood when we noticed a baby bird out of its nest. This was no ordinary baby bird. It was a Cooper's hawk, and we knew it right away. The nest was at the base of what my daughter determined to be about a 90-foot bur oak. Now, you can thank 4-H for that. She was in 4-H and did forestry with them, and they taught her how to measure a tree from the ground. It was not hard to do, and she was really close. She had it at 94 feet. That's probably just about right. The nest, I thought, was up about 85 feet or so. I was wrong. It was closer to 65 feet. So we took this little bird, not that evening, Monday evening, Tuesday morning, to the Wildlife Medical Center on campus in veterinary medicine. And there, I thought the story would end. Well, that's not the case. The Wildlife Medical Center gave me a call a few hours later, and they said, we'd like to put that bird back in the nest. Can you help us organize it? And I thought, well, how? But we did. And here's how that took place. One of the first things that happened was a phone call that I made to Phil Smith. He's somebody that the Wildlife Medical Center suggested. Phil's a tree climber, and he's the owner of Nature's Finest in Champaign. And he picks up the story from there.
The other real heroes, Ameren, came out and flew me up in their bucket, and I put it back in its nest.
Tell me about right at that moment, putting it back in its nest. What did the siblings do, and how did it take place?
He jumped back into the nest out of my hand, actually, and the older two flapped their wings a bit and kind of looked at him weird, and then he lay down on the side of the nest, and that was it.
You got a good selfie?
Oh, yeah.
And how... How often have you done this with the Wildlife Medical Clinic at VetMed on campus?
This is my second time doing this. Last year we worked together on some owl babies out by Philo, and pretty good success story there, not rehoming them to their parents, but they ended up at a rescue facility, and so we're happy with the results there.
You're a tree climber for a living?
I was. Don't climb anymore. Back and shoulders are bad, but that's what I grew up doing. So now I only climb when Sydney calls me.
All right. And Sydney is the one from the wildlife clinic.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you just like to do it.
Yeah, I love it. It's, to me, this is part of not only the community, but the ecosystem. And growing up protecting trees, keeping them healthy, you know, this is why you keep trees healthy, for all of the environment. So it's good to still be a part of it.
Are you an arborist too?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
I do disease and insect diagnosis and treatment on residential trees and that sort of stuff. And then I help municipalities deal with invasive species.
Yeah. How did you get into it?
My dad started the company in 1974 called Arborsmith in Champaign. And I still do all of my tree work under that branding. I've been doing it since I was six.
For you, it's about the ecology of the tree and its environment, I think.
Very much so. And the interaction with the community, and I just genuinely like to help people and things. So,
thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Phil Smith is a tree climber and an arborist. He talked about Arborsmith, which is in Champaign. He also owns Nature's Finest Inc. in Champaign as well. He was on site at the behest of the Wildlife Medical Clinic that's located on campus at the University of Illinois. Sydney Oliveira was with us too yesterday afternoon to put this baby Cooper's hawk, I named it Alec Cooper, by the way, back into the nest. I asked her to tell me something about the Wildlife Medical Clinic.
Yeah, so we're a volunteer-run organization that relies on donations and community members that find injured wildlife. They bring them into us. Since we run on about 90 to 120 volunteers, we really don't have full-time staff to go out and get animals. And since they are volunteers, they're going to school in addition to also working at the clinic like that. So we have to be careful with their time as well. So that's why we don't have the staff to go out and get animals. So
today you're on site rehoming Cooper's hawk. Not normally what you would do, I suppose, every day of the week. What do you normally go out and do?
Yeah, so normally I go out and give education outreach programs with our ambassador animals. But in the day-to-day life of the clinic, the volunteers would actually see patients that come in that people have brought in. And so they actually do a triage exam on them, and then they formulate a treatment plan and then see that animal through till release. But on day-to-day in the clinic, they're feeding baby animals. They're giving medical treatment to animals that need medical treatment. So sometimes that could just be medication. Sometimes it's surgery. Sometimes it's just monitoring and bulking those animals up before we release them back out into the wild.
Tell me about this Cooper's hawk.
Yeah, so we only had him in the clinic for about a day. Luckily, lovely community members found him after a storm, and he'd fallen down out of the nest, and they brought him into us immediately. And then we just kind of monitored until a tree climber was available. And so then they were able to schedule that, and we brought him out the next day so that he could be put back up in the nest.
So does that happen often? I mean, a bird actually just gets blown out of a nest?
It actually happens more often than people would think. So in those strong storms like that, if the nest isn't really sturdy, or if it's kind of, there's a large clutch of babies in there, sometimes the smaller ones can get pushed out if they're near the edge, and high gusts of wind like that can blow them out of the nest.
This bird fell 65, 70 feet, was only what, 2-3 weeks old? That seems amazing to me.
Yeah, yep. They're pretty resilient. So, and luckily we found no injuries with that bird too, so.
You only had it overnight.
Yep.
Everybody was excited to see it in. Yeah. Did it? Was it? Oh, new baby in the house, and we go see it all the time.
So we're actually more like hands off. It is really cool when we get young patients in like that. So normally for the triage exam, like everybody might come in, and some of them go in the room while we're examining. There's a window that they can also look through, but otherwise we're more hands off because we want them to stay wild. So while it is really cool to see, we do still respect them and want them to stay wild so we can get them back out in nature.
Sydney Oliveira is with the Wildlife Medical Clinic on campus at the University of Illinois in veterinary medicine on South Lincoln Avenue. She helped us to rehome a Cooper's hawk that fell out of a tree in our neighborhood. There are some special thanks. You already heard that Ameren helped out. So did Volo. If you don't know who they are, Volo is an internet service provider, fiber internet, and they do a really great job. There was a brand new fresh line that needed to be crossed by this great big Ameren truck coming into the home site. They came out short notice and buried that line, at least so that the truck could get across it. It was a really cooperative effort, and I was so happy to be involved in the rehoming of little Alec Cooper. You know, I shot video, of course, of this whole process. Later today, I'll try to put a snippet of it up at willag.org so you can see Alec Cooper being rehomed. Let's turn our attention to the weather in the global growing regions across the planet. Here to discuss it with us is Mike Tenorum. He's the president and CEO at T-Storm Weather. That's tstormonline.net, that is, tstorm.net. He's in Naperville, Illinois. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Todd. Always a pleasure being here. Thanks for having me.
I feel like the next 2 weeks are a very difficult forecast, trying to come up whether we are going to be hot and dry or cool and wet or somewhere in between. I've heard them all. I don't know that you'll have a better indication, but I'm hoping that you can talk through some of this with us.
Well, you're right. I mean, the computer models are all over the place once we get 1 to 2 weeks out, and I think the market is really focused on this. You need to keep in mind that we're pushing the limits of weather forecasting when we start to look really far into the future. And that's especially true when you have two very different air masses right next to each other. That is the case as we speak. A big hot air dome is going to develop in the plains this weekend. And at the same time, a cool air mass is going to develop in eastern Canada. That will create a very sharp temperature gradient across the continent. Now, normally, these types of things happen in the wintertime, and nobody's really paying that much attention to it because if it's warm out in the middle of December or if it's cold out, it doesn't really matter to a producer which one it is, and they're not thinking too hard about it. But in this case, everybody's thinking about it because it means a lot to corn yields and soybean yields for that matter, but especially corn because they're so dependent on temperatures at this time of the year. So here's the story, Todd. If this upper level high develops and is super, super strong, well, then that would basically allow a heat wave to start next week and then last into the end of July. And of course, that would be the scenario that would really drive yields downward. The other scenario would be if that high isn't quite that strong and it allows that cool front to move across southeast Canada and then spread outward. And that's where you get a northeasterly wind across the Corn Belt. You pull in all this nice cool air and you develop these beautiful days with high temperatures in the 70s and low temperatures in the 50s. And just to give you an idea of how volatile some of these models are, if we look at the GFS model from this morning, it was showing temperatures that were 10 to 20, even 30 degrees colder than what it was showing in its prior run just 12 hours earlier. And this is all looking out at about 10 days. And it just shows you that they're flashing heat wave, they're flashing coolness. We think the most likely scenario is somewhere in between. This is where you have heat in the western areas, you have some coolness in the eastern areas, and then everybody else in between, which is maybe half of the U.S. corn and soybean crop, they're kind of caught in between with some cool days, some hot days, and pretty much normal weather. So we think that even though this does need to be closely monitored every day going forward, we're not quite ready to sound the alarm bells, and there still is that potential for things to turn out just fine.
How long do we have to wait for these to settle down, do you think? Or maybe it's just a matter of time and how many days we have to wait before we get a better idea of what it might really look like.
Well, more than likely it would be sometime this weekend, which is typically the way it works out because the market is super focused on this through tomorrow. And then we'll really know what's going to happen by the time we get into Sunday night's open. So it'll be sometime this weekend where we'll see it and we'll have a much better idea of what's truly happening. But you do need to remember, that's only 10 days from now. This growing season goes all the way until the end of August. So the story won't be completely eroded by then, but we'll know a little bit more about what's going to happen. And one thing to keep in the back of your mind too, Todd, is that You know, we're moving into a strong El Nino. We can look at some of the data that's been coming in over the last few weeks, and water temperatures are soaring across the Pacific Ocean. And that's a signal that this El Nino is developing rather quickly, and it's also developing with a lot of strength. It's running about 1 to 3 months ahead of the last five strong El Ninos that we've seen since the early 1970s. And whether or not that plays into this is kind of a debatable topic. But if you look at those five strong events, none of them were preceded by strong heat waves in July or August in the Corn Belt. So, you know, that probably leans toward the scenario in which we don't have this big dominating heat wave. That would be a major anomaly with a strong El Nino ahead.
Okay, so as you think about where crop conditions are today, soil moisture across the Midwest, how are we actually set up to go through the pollination period at this point, regardless of what the temperature feels like?
Well, the soil moisture is A-OK at this point in time. Only 11% of U.S. corn was drier than normal over the last 30 days, and that's a pretty low number for early July. And even if it doesn't rain that much over the next week or two, you should have enough to ride on through and not have any major dryness problems. The only concern we have is that whether we're hot or cool, the rains don't look that fantastic going forward. And some areas would like to dry out a little bit over the next couple of weeks, but that's a real slippery slope. Generally, you don't want to be drying out in July, and you certainly won't want to be drying out in August for soybeans. So at this point in time, there's no super concerns about this. Soil moisture is pretty much ideal as we speak. It is going to turn a little bit drier as we move through the middle of the month. But as long as we get rains over the last 10 days of July, we only need maybe one or two. Everything should be looking fine.
Hey, thank you much. We appreciate it.
Sounds great, Todd. Thank you.
You're welcome. Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. You can find them there. He's the president and CEO of the company. A couple of notes as we close out our time together. Tomorrow, there is a USDA report at 11 a.m. I will be traveling for a funeral and not available tomorrow. So no update of those commodity numbers or the reports tomorrow afternoon. However, we do have a really good program put together for you, including an interview with a soybean breeder here on campus. She'll be making a presentation at a Soybean Association field day outside of Hayworth next Thursday. That's the 16th. You'll want to listen today and then get signed up and registered for that event. You can do that on our website at willag.org. Look for it in red on Thursday the 16th. You want to click to open it and then click more information. Once you've done that, that'll open the page again. And the link will become hot so that you can register for the Soybean Association Farm Field Day and see Ileana Monteverde in person. Tomorrow you'll hear her, of course, right here on Illinois Public Media. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. Find us online at WILLAG.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.